Hey, welcome to the show. On today's episode, we have Rye Bradley. Rye is a songwriter, singer, guitar player, rock and roller extraordinaire.
If you're just listening to this podcast, check out our YouTube channel. We have live performances from all the guests that we have on here.
Check it out.
I think you're on the right track. If you're going to do something, at least enjoy the making of it. No matter what the outcome is going to be, like, enjoy. Enjoy doing it. That's like,
yeah. It's been super fun, and if nothing else, it's just an excuse to hang out with these guys. So life could work because life gets busy. Like, I mean, I can't imagine your life right now. You've got the new kid. I can't imagine what that's like.
Yeah, I'm sure you can imagine.
I know. I can imagine, but I'm sure that changes some calculus. I'm sure some calculus changes pretty quickly after that.
No, let's do your imagination of it. What is my life like? I want to hear this. This is good.
No, I mean, it sounds silly because I can sit there and I can try to imagine what that's like, but I'm also sure that whatever I'm conjuring up in my head isn't even in the same world. I'm sure that whatever your sort of list of importance, let's say, however you're going to define that.
No, we're doing this. Okay. So close your eyes.
Okay.
Perfect. So you're waking up in your bed.
Okay.
And you're...
How hot is my wife?
She's very hot.
Okay, perfect. Okay, she's very hot. That's all. Okay. We're good.
Yeah. But it's fucking early.
Okay. I'm already there. We're
no,
say,
yeah, no, yeah. You got to close your eyes. Do the whole thing.
We're going the whole thing. Yeah, yeah.
It's early. Okay.
Perfect.
And you feel that you're tired. Mm-hmm. And there's a baby crying. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's like a little baby.
Okay.
What's that experience like? You're in this cozy bed.
It's the best.
Your beautiful wife is there, and then you got this baby crying, and you're like, I have to get up and get this kid.
See, this is going to sound silly. I actually think that's beautiful because in my head, where I'm at currently in life, I wake up at an ungodly hour so I can try desperately to fit everything into my day that I want to. But the only thing that gets me out of bed in the morning is just pure force of will. It's just pure, like, you're going to fucking get this done today. So it's, I imagine, again, as my own wiring is a little bit different, I'm sure, than everyone else's. But I imagine it's nice to have that purpose. It's nice to have that thing that says, regardless of what you feel like doing right now, you have to do this. Whereas for me, I do that regardless, but it's just sheer force of will.
You can imagine it. And I think a lot of people turn away from that because they know, like, dude, I don't want to have to be responsible for another person's life. But if you frame it in that context where you're going, like, I get to be her dad. She's crying. I'm the fucking one. I get to like make sure she's safe. Powerful. You could be on your deathbed and you'd be like, I'm getting up to help the child.
Yeah.
Like,
but
they always add, like, who am I? Everyone's always like, who am I? There's no way to tell. But there's these moments where who you really are shows itself. Mm-hmm. And you're like, dude, I'm getting up. I don't care. I don't care how tired I am. I don't care if I have to, like, donate all my organs for this child to, like, have a great life.
Yeah.
Like, run in front of a speeding train, I will do it. Having that person, like, oh, that's who I really am, not who I think I am, or like whatever thoughts.
I guess what I'm saying is sorry, Brian.
Sounds intense.
Fucking awesome. Yeah.
I don't know if I could handle all that pressure.
I guess what I'm saying is I can go through that process in my mind and do that calculation and figure out, okay, what would that be like? That being said, I'm sure it's so much more potent than I can even imagine not being that. I'm sure everybody is shocked, I guess, is a short way of saying that.
Yeah, I guess what I'm hearing you say is, like, intellectually you can kind of wrap your head around it, mm-hmm. but until you actually experience it.
Yeah, I'm sure that. How does that, for you, how has that changed as a creative person? How has that changed, or has it not changed, the way that you make things? Does it impact that, or does it not impact that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it impacts everywhere. I mean, we could go into that big time. Well, okay. So, you know, as a creative person, as a performing person, mm-hmm. there's a lot of thoughts going on all the time, right?
Yeah.
There's just like this, and this is not good enough. And what are they thinking? Is this going to actually be worth my time?
Yeah.
I can't tell, but I still want to make these things and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, that that exists everywhere, right? Like you're in a conversation with somebody at jiu-jitsu and you're like thinking about all of it. And then there's just all this mental noise, right? But if you choose it, if you choose to be a parent, I mean, some people have kids, they don't choose it.
Yeah, they're just it's not elected.
They're just like, no, I mean, like, they may have said, yes, let's do it, honey. But inside, they're like, I wish I wasn't doing this.
Mm, okay.
You know, I'm saying, like, you wake up and you're like, this is what I want to be doing. Mm-hmm. You choose it. If you do that, the noise turned way the fuck down.
Okay.
Like, so you're like,
it's a center of focus. It's a way of,
And I know for a lot of women, too, like, the focus turns from, like, am I good enough? Am I pretty enough? Is this going to happen? Like whatever it is for women, it becomes like, am I a bad mom?
Yeah.
Like the whatever anxieties,
the great
human, anxieties humans deal with. But I think even the women will agree, like the volume gets turned way down on everything that's not important. Mm-hmm. So even if you have a thought like, oh man, these people probably think I'm an idiot. We're like, I don't care.
Yeah. That's probably a good thing. Cause there's,
so it made it, to answer your question, it has made me better because I just execute what needs to be done now. Mm-hmm. And so like, this is really, I mean, now we're getting into like the 0.1% of people. Like if you're going to be a creative person, you're making this stand. I'm going to feed myself with my creativity and I'm going to do this little of bullshit, basically things for other people as I can so that I can spend my time doing my creative thing. Mm-hmm. But now you're supporting this life, right? So you're like, my creative thing has to support us.
Yeah.
Instead of like, you know, hear most people like, well, I quit because, you know, I had a kid. And I'm like, so wait, that's not choosing it.
Yeah.
That's like life happened to me. I had a kid and then I gave up on my dream or whatever it is. Like, so.
Yeah, I do think as someone who doesn't have children yet, I do think that there is something... there's something innate in all of us. It's sort of a, not a prerequisite to be a happy, fulfilled person, but almost a prerequisite to be. I think I guess that is a sort of sloppy way of saying, I think there are a lot of there are people in the world who can go through life without having experienced that and live very happy, very fulfilling lives. But I do think that there's something just innate in us as people that we kind of need that in order to have the full context of what life is. And I, and it's one of those things where I think people who do go through that, their art can oftentimes, if they stick with it, it can improve in immeasurable ways. Because even if you're not sitting down saying, okay, I'm writing a song about my child or my wife or whatever, there is that level of honing that occurs where you sort of focus up.
Both of you guys know this as musicians. At some point, I don't know if it's happened to you yet, at some point you will go, I'm so fucking tired of this person.
Yeah.
This, my music, my songs, where's my career? What do they think of me? Me, me, me. There's this moment that you'll have. I don't know if you've had it.
Oh, yes.
Where you're in your bed and you're like, I fucking don't. I hate Casey Harris. Oh, not you.
Yeah.
Because that's not you.
Exactly.
It's this performing person. Like, yeah. So I've had, I've gone some rounds with Rye Bradley. That's a name that my parents gave me, and then I modified it so that it was easier to find. Yeah,
that's a really beautiful way of saying it. And people would think of Rye
Cooter, which is all manufactured, right?
Yeah.
One person isn't just one thing, you know?
I've had to learn to, and it's funny you bring that up because it's something that I've experienced relatively recently in life. We've all had struggles. I mean, Brian and I have talked about this ad nauseum in life. There's times where, you know, there's times where Brian's been close to being like, I never want to pick up a guitar again, you know? And as him being my best friend, there's had to be times where I have to hear him say that, knowing full well that, okay, I know he doesn't mean that, or I know eventually he'll pick up the guitar. But for me, I've gotten close to that recently in life where I've kind of come out the other side of that, where I've realized that, you know what, whatever this thing is, whatever that Casey Harris construction is, that I've been meticulous and very thoughtful and attentive into building, I have had to let that go. And it's on one hand,
it's hard to do that, though.
It is. And on one hand, it's very scary because you think, oh my God, I've clocked in a lot of hours with this guy. And on the other hand, it's incredibly freeing because I think, okay, no, that's whatever that construction is, as important as you thought it was throughout that course of time to build that thing and to maintain it, it becomes something that weighs you down. And yeah. And I've had to get to a point, again, in the last couple of years in life, where I've said, you know what? That's not how I want to do this. Mm. And I just want to, like, this show, whatever you want to call this, is a good example of that. It's like, this is never something I would have done a handful of years ago. But now I just feel comfortable in my own, in whatever this is, that I feel like, no, I can do this. I can do jujitsu. I can do all of the stuff.
Oh, you mean
in
like,
life
like that, oh, I don't have to just be this one thing.
Exactly. Okay, I can be whatever I'm putting out into the world as a creative person can reflect all of those things, I guess is the best way of saying that. Right. And that to me is a place that it took a long time to get to, because if you take what you do seriously, which I do, I know everyone at this table does, obviously. If you take what you do seriously, there's a level of molding oneself that's just inevitably going to occur, where you're trying to make something that you can put into the market and make something you hope is successful and you hope people listen to, so you can feed yourself doing this thing.
And that's the kiss of death.
Exactly. And it's that's the last thing you want to do. What you want to be doing is just making shit because it's what you want to make. And because it's like, and like that to me is huge. And
which
that,
also is a slippery slope. Cause then you're like, this is me. I just love my thing.
Exactly.
But then it's like, don't you want to make something that other people like will fulfill, fulfill other people? Like I remember when I had this radio push. I was on a label, and the label was pushing my stuff on the radio promo or whatever. I would get these emails that were like, hey, I only have my kid on the weekends, and we listen to your song when we drive to church, and I just want to say thank you. Yeah. I'm like, oh, fuck. That's it. That's cool. Because that song came from a real place.
Yeah.
And then I connected with other humans.
I mean, I think people respond the most to authenticity. So I think people get caught up in trying to create something that they think other people want to listen to. But
why are people getting further away?
What they really want to listen to is like what is authentically you.
Yeah, and that's where I feel like a lot of people misstep, is they love that feeling that you're articulating where somebody is affected by what you're doing, but they're missing that component that Brian's talking about where the reason why that is successful, the reason why that conveys something to an audience, is because it's coming from a sincere place. And because the audience, I think on a creative level, the audience has to factor in zero. I'm sure there's times where you can put yourself in the eyes of the listener, or the ears of the listener, whether it's through production or through the presentation of that thing.
Right, you're like making sure that what you're making is like communicating
exactly
to other people.
But I think on the creative level, when it comes to, you know, I say this a lot, but going from nothing to something, that's what's happening on a creative level. There's some magic that's occurring where you're going from nothing to something. And none of us, as you know, as much as we all kind of sit here and I mean, I think about this stuff all the time because it's what I love doing. None of us really have an answer as to how that happens. But whenever you're dealing with that nothing to something, there's that kind of gut instinct of wanting to understand what's going on there. And I think letting go of that and being able to just accept that you're not going to get all the answers, that's fine. Just keep doing the thing, keep honing what it is you're doing, and keep trying to get better at that. I think that's the only way to, at least in my head, it's the only way to really, really go.
Okay, well, let's talk about getting better.
Yeah.
Like there's so many conversations I'm having with people lately in the jiu-jitsu world, but also in the music world, where it's like a lot of people are saying that they're into it, but their actions are not showing that they're like really, well, this whole idea of getting better, like how many people do you know that have been playing the same stuff that they on their instrument since high school?
Yeah.
They never like, and or they have something like, well, you know, I started to work. I wanted to pursue it, but I never wanted that transition from this is really fun to this is my job. The fun stops to be like the fun used to be. I feel good when I'm doing this and it's like this creative thing and I'm hanging out with my buddies too. Like now the fun is like I'm going to get that gig or I'm going to get some kind of deal. Like it used to be get a record deal, but now it's like get all these streams or like start making money with it. Like your fun stops being, hey, let's drink beers in the garage and play, to like, And people like fight against that, right? Like the one guy in the band is like, no, man, we got to get it to the next level.
Yeah.
And he's like giving the drummer shit and giving everybody a hard time because they're not practicing the songs and getting better. And they're like, and those guys are like, dude, this is just a fun thing that we do.
For you as a creative person, do you have a set routine? Because I know for me, the personality type that I am, I'm an A to B to C to D kind of person. Like I need that every hour, every
like
minute of my day.
Like a workflow or like
yeah, exactly.
Some like kind of structure?
Every minute, okay. Every minute of my day is accounted for. You know what I mean? Just because that's the way that I know that I function. And
that's your comfort zone for sure.
Exactly, exactly. And so for you, what is currently, because this is a fluid thing, I feel like this is always changing for people, what is the current state of that routine, whatever that is, to improve, to make sure that you're not just sitting in the same place creatively?
Oh, dude. Okay.
Well,
it's like all these different hats, right?
Yeah. And oh, absolutely.
Like, so like, I still want to get better as a guitar player. I've been wanting to do that since I was 11. Like, mm-hmm. It's just chasing this thing. Like, got to get better at guitar.
Yeah.
And then there's all these like potholes and landmines there where you're like, oh man, I'm playing today. I'm playing for the other guys in the back of the room. Not mm-hmm. me. I'm not expressing anything. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to show some shit that's fucking cool. That's like mm-hmm. people that go to music school deal with that all the time.
Yeah.
They're like, especially jazzers. Like, they're like just trying to out.
We know it.
They're just like smelling each other's farts and going, yeah, that's real. That's not real. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, but you take the people who I really love, no matter what genre is, jazz, blues, country, mm-hmm. they're expressing something from inside. And so like, Freddie King didn't play that fast, but I don't meet anybody that can play the way he did mm-hmm. and like phrase things the way that he does, you know? So, as a guitar player, I have stuff that I'm doing that I just push myself. And then I have, as a songwriter, I actually got this from Ryan Adams. Don't me too me anybody, but they asked him about his songwriting and like how he stays on top of all of it. And he goes, well, I just go like right now I'm writing. Mm-hmm. So like for a certain period he writes,
yeah,
you know, and then he's like, now I'm producing. So I'm like, because I'm sure you run into this, like,
but it's
going from like, I'm going from this writing session to now I'm going to teach some guitar lessons because I need to make some money. And then I'm going to go home and practice. Like, mm-hmm. dude, do you really want to practice after?
Yeah.
You,
like it's being all conscious your brain of when of, like, you're taking yeah, those hats on. He's
like, yeah, I find it really hard to balance like the creative writing side of things and then also like the more practice oriented
right yeah the regimen of that.
It's hard for me to like bounce between those two. Well, I haven't really figured out how to like do both efficiently. Well, I'll go through long phases yeah. where I'm like more of in a creative state and then long phases where I'm like, you know, practicing the technical stuff, but it's hard to
well that relates to what I was talking about when like people go they don't get that like practicing is this like regimented, I'm trying to get to this other place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But most people who play music and the reason it doesn't work out for them is because they don't realize that they're expecting it to be this like enjoyable, fun thing they do every time. Mm-hmm. And so like this disciplined person who's like, now I'm working on these things and improving these skills is a totally different person than, hey, I'm trying to express something.
Yeah. I tell all of my students. So for myself, what I, and again, this is tailored to me and how I view the world. When I sit down to play guitar, I'm sitting down with one of two goals in mind. I'm either sitting down just to fuck off and have fun and love the act right. of doing
See,
the
you
thing.
Guys, this is it. Like, that's a very conscious thing. Most people don't yeah. get that. They're like,
or I'm sitting down to practice. And in which case it's like, no, you have the practice cap on right now. Right. And I feel like that's where, again, some people, they don't need that differentiation. Some people can probably, maybe not, I don't know. Some people can probably sit down without that and still be productive and still improve. But for me, I know as a person, I need that line in the sand to know, okay, what am I doing right now? Because otherwise it's just, you know, time flies by when you've got a guitar in your hands.
How many times have you been invited to like a family thing or whatever, and you're like, I can't, I got to practice. And they're like, just practice here. in front of all of us. Like, no, that's not what I'm doing.
Way too many
times. Yeah, yeah, like it's not gonna sound good there. Like,
yeah,
you're gonna hear the same phrase 40 times in a row. Like,
yeah,
you know.
And like to me, I was
even like just practicing in my little room over here, knowing she's like on the couch, hearing me like play
the same riff over and over. And I always tell my students, so and I break this down to just nuts and bolts because I'm a crazy person, but I always look at when it comes to sitting down and practicing, I think there's sort of two halves of the equation. You have what I call the intellectual part of practicing, which is sitting down and understanding, okay, what on a musical level is going on here? What are the notes that are being played? What's the relationship between those notes, the rhythm, all in that could even extend to where am I putting my fingers on a guitar, right? All of the processing power that's occurring when you're doing that. And then the other half of the equation, and that's interesting. Like for most people, that's the part of practicing that is, that's fun and fascinating, keeps you wanting to come back. The other part
totally
is
don't agree, man.
No,
most people that play, that want to play an instrument, that is way too confronting.
Oh, see,
they're like, wait, I want to feel inspired. See, that's why people quit.
Well,
they get
I guess
a guitar
what I'm saying when you're talking about the practicing, right? When you zoom in on the practicing, and someone sits down and they have the ball, say, okay, I'm going to practice right now.
I'm going
to
get good.
Usually,
at this
that's the half of the equation that I feel like keeps people's attention at least. The other part is what I call the mechanical half of practicing, which is
boring
just
part.
Which is just doing the physical action over and over and over again. Yeah. And to me, like I tell people, like I break that down to the absolute most minute of differences. So if you're playing a particular scale, playing that scale in the same position, the exact same notes on the fretboard, but using different fingers, right? Little moments like, cause there's going to be one moment when you're performing where you want that particular finger position.
Okay,
and there's
so
going to be another moment where you want a different finger position.
The thing is, you're giving away the magic. So this is the thing.
Most this is free music lessons,
no,
right?
No,
here,
people, the people that are listening don't want any of that.
Yeah.
They want you to have this divine gift.
Yeah.
So in secret,
yes,
you practice, you focus, you get it so perfect, staying up late. Mm-hmm. And then when you get out there, you're like, oh, I don't know, I was just feeling it. Because that's like, and when it comes to like, we're going to idolize a musician, they want somebody that's just like,
well, people don't, the thing is, people don't want to admit that Hendrix spent like 17, 18 hours a day with a guitar in his hands. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
You know what I mean? Like, no one wants to admit that because then it, which is weird because for me, again, and this is just my crazy mind, when I hear that, that's the great, this is what I tell all my students, that is the greatest thing to hear in the world because you're like, oh, I could do that.
Right.
If I was that crazy and if I was that obsessed with that thing, and if I clock that much, those hours and that much attention into that thing, I can do that. To me, that's the greatest news in the world. Like when I realized that as a kid, I mean, yes, everything in my life went out the window immediately.
Right.
But
right.
It's the greatest news you can be given because you think, oh my God, it's all there. And for some people, they're going to pick that up faster than others. I mean, that's, again, that's inevitability. That's just how we are as people. But it's the same thing, again, like with jujitsu or whatever it might be. There are going to be people who that particular skill set can be acquired faster than other people. But I love that. I love knowing that it's just hours clocked in. Like, I just think there's something really, really beautiful about that for
okay,
me.
So you zoom out from there, okay? Now you're working on the instrument. There's no more time to practice stuff. You're just like always playing. You're always doing gigs. You're like, I'm not getting any better. Hendrix talked about this.
Yeah.
He'd be like, I want to write a song, but all I'm doing is like playing the same Little Richard song all night.
Yeah.
You know, that's when he started to do his own. But anyway, you're working. You're like, that used to really fulfill me to get better. And now I just feel like I'm doing the same thing, going through the motions. And when you play music for money, you start to notice like most of the people that are involved aren't doing it because they love music. They're doing it to be on stage in front of people, or they think that this is their path to be making money, or they want some kind of notoriety, or they want to be recognized. And I think for guitar players, especially ones that went to school, we're going like, hey, other guitar players, just respect what I'm doing. Like, I want to be one of the real guys. Other guitar players, let me know. Which is not what's happening in the barroom floor.
Mm-hmm.
The college girls don't give a shit about that.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, this guy looks like Luke Bryan. I'm like which is not wrong. I mean, I'm not, like, everybody is here and experience something different, right? So then 10 years of, like, you're working goes by, and you're like, dude, what am I doing? This doesn't feel as, like, honest and true to the thing that I really wanted to do. So I meet this drummer a couple weeks ago, and he's so good, we're just playing, and he's like, I've been doing this for 10 years. I don't know how much longer I could do it. I'm like, this dude's freaking amazing. Like, what is he talking about? And I go, look, man, the thing that always keeps me coming back, because I'm 44 now, and I started working right after, I mean, I was playing in high school. I was doing gigs in high school, but like really feeding myself with the instrument when I was 22. So that's a while. I told him, the thing that keeps me coming back and just keeps me going is that I just fucking love music. And when all that other shit gets in the way, I'm like, oh, that's not music. None of it is music except for actually playing it. Mm-hmm. Getting your followers online, or trying to even like talk about how great your band is to get a gig, or any of that. Even the money side of it. And none of that is actually playing music in the moment. Like, I guess I'm talking about being present. Mm-hmm. That's why I was like, hey, let's play together. Because we didn't get any cool, like really high quality videos of us when we went to Norway.
Yeah.
I was like, let's document these two dudes who are friends playing together.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you keep all that other shit from tainting the love of music? Because that's something I've really struggled with in certain points in my life, is like, you need to make money. You need to, you know, get in with these people. Like, you know, all this...
It really hurt.
Other shit can really get in the way.
It really hurt in the beginning. In fact, I guess I had the Band-Aid pulled off. Uh-huh. And what I mean is, like, so I was just writing songs that I was feeling, and people were responding to it. And I was actually on tour as a guitar player for another band. And I recorded the songs, and I just wanted to make something. You know, that, like, desire to make something. Mm-hmm. I made something, and this publisher in Nashville was like, that's good. We're going to give you a writing deal. And at the same time, it was like some friends of mine knew this publisher, and they started this record label to put songs out on me. Mm-hmm. And so I went from, I'm making something that I'm really happy about and people are responding to it, to you are in the music business. And my publisher used to say, like, you're in music, you're not in the music business. And I would be like, dude, he keeps saying that. I'm tired of him saying that shit. Like, he doesn't, mm-hmm. I'm like, I book gigs, I do contracts. He's like, no, you're not in the music business. And I didn't really get it at first, until I realized that I really needed to start putting on a completely different hat. Like, you know, there's all these like psychological studies where it's like they make people watch sexy videos, and then they ask them questions, and then they make them watch like sad videos. They ask the same questions, mm-hmm. and they get like completely different responses based on people's state of mind, state of being.
Yeah.
And so I guess the short answer to your question is, like, Brian, the creative person, should really be protected.
Yeah.
Usually by Brian,
just trying to separate everything as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so basically I'm with this publisher. We're like, now I have a publishing deal. Cool. I'm actually a professional musician. I'm getting a monthly draw on my songs. This is cool. And I show up to show the songs I've been writing that week. And he's like, that's the worst shit I ever heard in my life. Quote. Like, so I made something that I thought was great, and this guy is sitting behind it, and I'm like, these might as well be used cars for him. He's just trying to move these cars on his lot and make money, which in hindsight, he told me he was purposely trying to be hard on me to like give me some tough love or something like that. He could have just said, like, look, this is basically about selling some shit.
Yeah.
Like, so make me some shit that I could sell. That's what he really should have said.
Yeah.
And I would have been enrolled. I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, then I would have been guarding this thing. So
what is that relationship like? So for you, the way that I kind of parse through this stuff,
by the way, that's Charlie Munk, and he was an amazing mentor for me in the music business. And even though it was hard and it seemed like he was an asshole, he was a great friend. Anyway, go ahead.
Nice. No, that was a good little disclosure there. For me, I have to compartmentalize that. So for me, it's like, okay, I have a hard time in life because I think oftentimes, do I want to, for lack of a better term here, prostitute what I'm doing? Do I want to degrade what I'm doing in order to be able to feed myself doing the thing that I love doing? Or do I hold to what it is that I'm doing and then find external means of keeping the lights on, so to speak? And for me, I've always found, or what I, the place that I've gotten to at this point in life is that to be a happy person, for me, I found doing the latter is what keeps me sane. So,
okay. Yeah.
So I'm curious for you, does it, have you had that same internal struggle of what is the balance here of staying true to what it is that I feel like I need to be doing creatively versus what I need to be doing to feed myself and make sure that I'm paying my rent and keeping the lights on. And in this case now, because the stakes just keep getting higher in life, now you have a wife, you have a child to support, you have all of those. How do those things input into that calculation as well? I know that's a loaded question, but I'm fascinated because for me, it's me and a dog. And for me, I have a hard time because I have those same battles. So I can't imagine how, as the stakes get higher, you don't lose your mind thinking about those things.
Yeah, these are really good questions. I made a resolution very early that I was going to feed myself with my talents. And so that basically meant I was never going to do something that wasn't music. And the consequence of that was sometimes I was playing music for money that I didn't like. Or even when I got that record deal, your incentives are there. You're not actually aware of what your incentives are. So mm-hmm. it's like, I'm this artist and I have an artistic voice. I'm like Bowie. I just make shit. But also, you're getting a monthly check from these people and they want to sell songs to this like popular culture mainstream thing. So you're like, even though you're not aware, I wasn't aware. I'll talk about me actually. So I wasn't aware that I was like slowly just making shades of decisions slightly further away from my creative voice. Mm-hmm. So what happened was eventually I started making things that were sellable with like the flavoring of my unique voice. Does that make sense?
Oh, like, absolutely. Yeah, so that's a very good way of saying that.
Yeah. So, and I still stand by a lot of the stuff I made because I'm like, that is a great country song. That is mm-hmm. a great mainstream country song. Like,
yeah.
That's a well-made thing, you know? But to answer your question, I do a lot of things to keep the lights on because I have this resolution of I'm only going to use my talents to make money. So that means like I have a lot of corporate gigs. And what's interesting about the corporate gigs, basically I put on this businessman hat. I'm like, okay, so I was on the radio and when my corporate booking agent pitches me, they're like, this is a star. Mm-hmm. The corporate band, the corporate buyer, they want a cover band. Mm-hmm. But so what I do is I go, you're getting the star. We're going to play the covers, some of them that's still like we like.
Yeah.
But you're also getting an artist. So it becomes this context thing. Like, so maybe there's only one or two of my original songs in the set and Wells Fargo or whoever, whatever mm-hmm. band or whatever company, let's not even put a name on it, Company X, they're getting the thing that they want for their people. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm putting a service. I'm just mm-hmm. putting it in a package that you're also getting a real artist. So now instead of like the people that work there, when they go to the event, instead of like, oh, that cover band was good, mm-hmm. they're like, we saw Rye Bradley.
Yeah.
And then I have my CDs and
That's a really smart way of going about that.
Yeah. I had to basically, I come from a long line of scammers. No, I'm kidding. So I basically had to go like, how can I maximize this situation? So I'm giving away all my tips now.
I think that's wonderful.
You have to cut that out. That's my,
steal that.
I think I realized pretty early on that I can't be expecting people to get me. I was expecting my parents to get me as a kid. Why don't they get me? Mm-hmm. Expecting all my girlfriends growing up. That's an empty pursuit, trying to get people to understand who you are. No one can understand anybody. We're such mm-hmm. dynamic creatures. Nobody's just one thing. I'm like, so, okay, I don't care if people get me. But what I can do, because I'm actually nothing. I'm like this fluid talking mm-hmm. chimp that thinks he's Rye Bradley, this musician or whatever. What I can do is use these skills that I've been so obsessed about to make something that will lift people up. And luckily, I've been able to make things that I also like.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that I think is really interesting about what you do too, is when I listen to the material that you have put out there as Rye Bradley, it is such a artist-driven thing. It is such a there is such a clear singular voice there, which I think is fantastic, because that can be very hard when you're doing all of that, when the, all that juggling is occurring at once, it can be easy to lose that. But when I listen to the singles or the records you put out, I think, no, there's clearly a voice there. There's that is who you are. Do you have to feel immensely proud of the fact that you're able to juggle all of those things, and also that the finished product is you, or a, yeah, or a representation
actually,
of you.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. Well, I actually got a lot of this from my wife. She's a hairstylist, and she's in this community of hairstylists where they do these seminars. None of it is about hair. It's all about growing your business and marketing and all that stuff. And like, so most fans never want to hear their favorite musician talk about marketing. Mm-hmm. Like, no, we want this. We feel like you're our guy. Like, you're just like us.
Yeah.
Unaware that there's been this like marketing team that has created this persona. Anyway, my wife's teaching me about all this marketing stuff and like how to grow a brand and all that stuff. I'm like, well, I love dogs. Freaking love dogs. So she's like, what do you want people to know about you? Like, 'cause it still has to be authentic to you. So we're like, basically, she's like, let's make your brand. And I'm like, okay, I don't like pop country, modern pop country. I love blues. She's like, oh man, you're already like in this niche. I'm like, that was a realization where I'm like, I would rather have 1,000 people who love what I do.
Exactly. Yeah.
And really get into it than 100,000 who just like have heard of me, you know? And so that's what it was like, man, I love blues music so much. I love to play the guitar. I love dogs. And one of the things that really bothered me when I was, on like doing the radio interviews and stuff like that was I just wanted to show like I am committed to my relationship. I love my wife. I'm more of a like understated. I'm not going to shake my ass and be like your pretty boy. I mean, I'm older now, but at the time
I would be like
shredding on stage, like so about the music, and all I would get from the people in the audience was like, you're so hot. Oh my God. I'm like, yeah. And I would be, that was me going like, why don't they get me? Yeah. I'm like, dude, empty pursuit. So now I just wanted people to know, like, if you are following my music because you think I'm hot or something, like, and this sounds like something.
No, but I get, girls I get exactly about, what you're saying.
Then you're in the wrong place. Like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm really committed to the people in my life and community. So like, I would get shit too for like, you know how I do the teen music camps or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People would be like, dude, why, like, spend your time on like whatever it is.
Yeah.
Go to these Hollywood parties and stuff. I'm like, I will go to those Hollywood parties, but it's so boring. But I actually am in front of real people having like a real experience right now with these, like either a teen camp or freaking teaching people jujitsu. Like it's something that's like a real thing that's happening now.
But I think that's, to kind of go off on a little side tangent here, I think one of the, I know that the contemporary state of the music business can often get shit on. I absolutely love it. I think it's incredible because we have such access to music now in a way that we've obviously never had before in the history of the world. And one of the things I think is so wonderful about that is, to sort of piggyback off of what you were saying earlier, everything can be, because of the way that we take in music, everything is hyper-personalized to you as an artist. So for example, you know, if you were living,
like, so you can, like, who, you no matter who you are, you're going to find somebody that speaks
even,
to
even what, just the idea of genre now is kind of irrelevant, frankly, because if you were living in Alabama in 1949, the access to music that you had,
hillbilly, race, and
but as someone who
commercials, like there was only three types of music in 1949.
And right? as someone who like, to me, my favorite thing in the world in regards to music is roots music, is the tracking of how this stuff works and the different outcomes that we get because of that. And you can see up until really the invention of the internet, frankly, it's very clear how certain pockets of music progress and how we get, how different genres become defined geographically.
Like little cultures.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
And what's fascinating now is we live in a world where every person, every artist has access to all of the art that's been made in the last 120 years. And what happens because of that is everyone becomes the amalgamation of all of the things that they love. And so those borders dissolve immediately. And what is really interesting about the way that the state of music business, because of that, what you have is in the major three labels, we'll say, in order to deal with that,
major three labels meaning like the genres or
meaning actual record labels? Actual record labels, right? The big money in music, for again, lack of sort of more defined terms. The only thing that they can do is cast a wider net of people. When people complain about the fact that everything sounds the same now, well, yeah, all of the pop music of 2024 is far, 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 far more similar than it was in 1980 or 1970 or 1960, right? Because what they're having to do out of reaction to this is they're having to just distill everything down to the most basic components and then cast as wide a net as possible with that, whatever that thing is, right? But then what people don't realize is outside of that, all of the other people who are making music are making the most interesting music you can possibly imagine.
I'm with you. Yeah. That's like when somebody who's, I have a lot of older friends and mm-hmm. they're like, man, I'll hear like, man, there's no
good. I do too. One of them's at the table right now.
Yeah. Me. They're like, there's no good music now. There's no new good music. I'm like, dude,
it's the time.
It's like, no, you grew up in a time where they just shoved the same thing down your throat on the three TV channels. Oh, right. There's so many cool artists making stuff. You just have to go look for it.
I think what they're reacting to, that sort of knee-jerk reaction that they're having, is because what is being presented as pop music is
not for them.
Well, no, it's not even that. It is so much more singular. It is so much less interesting because
it's for everybody.
Because the reaction that they're having, the reaction that sort of mainstream music is having to everything being so individualistic, is they have to just dumb it down to the lowest common denominator for everything.
I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. We are.
Basically, like, if you want to find something really good, you're going to have to
dig for it a little bit.
Yeah. It's not going to be on the Ed Sullivan show and you get to see the Beatles.
Exactly. Like, it's like, I would so much rather live in that world. Like, I wake up every day so thankful that I live in 2024 because you have the ability to do that. Whereas if you had the passions that I or you or Brian or whomever have in 1955, that's an uphill battle. And that's not to say that it isn't currently, but it's a much easier now to be able to find your sect, to find your little subgroup of people who are interested in what you're doing. Cause I don't need 15 million people to like my record. I don't need that. Mm. What I need is I need to find that small pocket of people who do really find value in what
I'm
doing.
Yeah. Totally agree. Yeah. Yeah. I think we're in a world where it's more like build your tribe.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's beautiful. I think that's a really great place to be in. And I think people can get frustrated because they can think, why can't I find that tribe? Why is it so hard to find those people? But you can do it. It just takes time and a lot of legwork. And
actually, can we go back to what you were talking about, like working?
Yeah,
something about else. Actually, no, because I feel like I still wanted to respond about that.
Please do.
Like, you were talking about like working to support yourself and making art mm-hmm. without having to be like, this needs to make money to support, you know, mm-hmm. like kind of compartmentalizing.
Yeah.
I actually I have a young friend who is like, he wants to be a songwriter and all this stuff. And he's always like, should I get this job? Should I get this job? I'm like, mm-hmm. dude, get a job at the coffee shop. He's like, what? Like, he's too good to work at the coffee shop. And I'm like, you will meet people, talk to people all day, every day. When you go home, you will have no responsibilities other than your music. Mm-hmm. Like,
That's all you need, right?
That's
the move.
Yeah, because he's like, well, you know, I won't make that much. And I'm like, well, maybe you're in an apprentice period of your life where you like live cheaply so you can work on your thing that you love, like mm-hmm. you know, And this poor guy, I think he's just grew up in this house where it's like, you must have a job that hits all these markers, like the old school baby mm-hmm. boomer, like you must go to this job and then retire at 65, and you must have a pension. And like, his mindset is that's how you do life. Mm-hmm. And it's once you're really stuck there, it's hard to be like,
yeah, that's
wow.
a hard hole yeah. to dig yourself out of. It yeah. really is.
Totally.
To go from that to like, okay, I'm booked for gigs this month. I have nothing next month.
Yeah.
And then on the 15th of the month, you get another one in this. Like, mm-hmm. you're basically just kind of like going for it and like living by the seat of your pants. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people can't deal with that. And I actually think that's one of the things about freedom. Like, if you don't have this steady day job, or what's his name? Robert Greene calls it addicted to the paycheck. You actually are free, but the consequence of that, you're free to do whatever you want all the time. Mm-hmm. The consequence of that is you don't have this, like, I know how I'm going to pay the rent in 2 months. You know, so yeah. he's like, you're basically selling your time for security, or you can like go out and wing it and just keep trying to hustle gigs and or whatever it is you want to do. And you're free to do whatever you want all the time.
So. I've gotten to a place recently in life, and Brian and I have talked about this off the pod. I've gotten to a point in life where I think I've, and this is not a new revelation, but something relatively recently in life, I've realized that what I need to be a happy person, frankly, is to work for myself. As silly as that sounds. Don't get me wrong. Having a nice cushy
Why
job.
Why does that sound silly?
Having a
that
nice cushy job.
That brilliant
where you
to
get,
me. That sounds
get
great.
A paycheck at the end, you know, every 2 weeks, and like, and I don't need to worry. I've got, you know, I've got my health insurance cleared, and all of those things are checked off. That's great. But I've just gotten to a point of realization in my life, probably later than I should have, that what I need to be a happy person is to know that I'm working for myself. And that, I think, is a very scary thing. It's a very scary realization for a lot of people to get to. And I think most people don't need that to be happy. I think most people can go through life working for someone else and be happy and fulfilled and find meaning in life and be nice, kind people. I've realized that I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And not because I'm sitting here sulking coming home from work every day. It's not that. It's just... It even transcends music, frankly. It's this feeling of I need to build something for myself. And I know Brian is the exact same way. Brian is the exact same.
Like, I just
whatever that trait is.
I want to do something I actually care about. You know what I mean? Like, sure, getting a paycheck every month is nice, but like, you know, the day-to-day stuff, it's just you don't really care about your job. You just kind of pretend to, so you can get the check at the end of the month.
This stuff is all that we're talking about is all happening in the corporate world.
Absolutely.
There's a tide changing where, like, this idea that you work for the company and you just do what you're told and you get the paycheck, it's producing like bad results now. After the lockdown, people are like, mm-hmm. I don't want to like just go work for somebody else. So there's this like new leadership situation happening. I think it's called like conscious leadership, and basically it's about enrolling the employees in being part of the team, not even part of the team, like they own it. They like you, it's not just my company and you work for me. Mm-hmm. Like, we are going here. So even if you are just an employee, it's like dedication to the whoever's managing or leading the situation, explaining and letting everybody know that they're a crucial part of getting mm-hmm. to this other place, and like they will also reap the rewards of it. Like, basically saying, mm-hmm. like, get them to care about what they're doing instead of just like...
Well, it's almost this, it's almost a feeling of societal freelancing almost, where you realize that what you need is you need a marketplace of skill sets, and you can bring, like for us right now, we're at a place where, and just to use an example from the podcast, we need clips of things, right? Little like short, silly, like little clips of things, right? So for us, it's like, okay, well, we've spent the time sitting down figuring, okay, how can we do this ourselves, right? Whether that's sitting there manually doing it, whether that's figuring, you know, using AI programs or whatever. That being said, there are only so many hours in the day. All three of us have day jobs that suck our life away, right? We're already like, you know, I get up at 4:55 every day so I can fucking get everything done that I need before I go to sleep at midnight. You know what I mean? Like, we all have just life. And so there's only so many hours in the day. And yet, okay, well, what can we do? Well, we can see, are there people out there that we know who have this skill set? And if there are, what can we do to bring them on board to try and help with this, right? And so, and that I think is really, that I think is a great thing for the way that we all interface, is to realize that, okay, it can be a sort of, for lack of a better word, freelance approach to a lot of business, where you are bringing individuals on who say, okay, you have a specific skill set here. Can you help me with this thing?
Okay. What if you use a different word?
Okay.
Community.
Okay.
It's a community project so that everybody involved is actually getting something out of it. So like, you are good at this and I'm good at this. Yeah. We're going to build something together, community, which I think is more in alignment with the way human beings actually work.
Like this
Western,
fair, yeah.
You know, like the Western, meaning European view of like, I'm going to get my money and I'm going to get my house and take care of my family. And we're all going to have our own stuff isolated from each other. I think lends itself to a lot of problems.
I think it's a balance. Yeah. I think there's
depression, balance, overwhelm, but it's like, no, this is my,
and
this
that's
is
why
my community.
That's why I have found just so much happiness in doing this. I mean, we've only done, you know, we've probably done what, less than 10 of these at this point, but I just enjoy this immensely, because I just think that it feels good to be able to, on the other side of this, give something to someone and be like, hey, like, here are these videos and here's this audio of you performing and doing something. Like, here's a conversation of you talking about this thing that you love, or whatever, you know, could be talking about whatever. But to me, it's like, that's something that I am very surprised at the other end of this. Gives me immense pleasure being able to just help other people that I love out. I
think, and just having something that we can build for ourselves, you know.
So I think that you need that in life. You need all the, like, but I get what you're saying, and I think that frankly people just want to help each other out. I do think that there's something something innate in all of us of wanting to build with our fellow people something that we're proud of. Yeah. It's, to me, it's like why I think Lord of the Flies is the dumbest book of all time. I cannot stand that book. I talk about this all the time with everyone, because I think it's, yeah, I think it's, that really bothers me, because I think that's the exact opposite of how human beings actually move through the world. Yes, obviously we need to be able to civilize people. We need to have rules. We need to have guardrails in place as two individuals, recognizing, hey, this guy, we have to keep this guy in line. He has to keep us in line. You know, like those things have to be present. But at the end of the day, we want to help each other out. We want to steer the ship in the same direction, generally speaking, you know, we keep each other in check is probably better.
I'm going to read Lord of the Flies.
Don't fucking bother.
No. He's got a William Golding. He has a book of essays that he wrote. Mm-hmm. One of them is called Thinking is a Hobby.
Yeah.
Dude, I read this when I was like 15. I think it changed my life trajectory. He basically says, thinking is a hobby, there's three levels. Number one, you're ignorant and blissful. You're just going through life. Everything's happening. Like, whatever. It's like, that's life. It's just happening to you. Mm-hmm. You don't really think too deeply about it. Level two, you see everything that's wrong. And it just like drags you down. Mm-hmm. You're like slightly smarter and you're slightly more aware, and you just see everything that's wrong. And then he said, level three is you see everything that's wrong, but then you still are creative. You still create things.
It's still choosing.
Like you see it all, and you're, in spite of it all, you continue to progress, make things, contribute to people.
My mother has this saying that it's like a motto for her. My whole life, and it used to really put me off. Happiness is a choice, and it's this thing that really used to, as a
dude,
as a
when
young
you're depressed,
person,
someone said that to you, you're like,
no, as a young, and especially as a young person who was constantly struggling with this. Like, I feel so blessed that I have things in my life that I am obsessed with, I it makes me so happy that I have things that I, whether it's music, whether it's film, whether it's jujitsu, whatever, things that I think about constantly. I love that. At the same time, you can at times in life view that through a different lens and view that as just the worst curse in the world because you think, why the fuck is this not working? Or why the fuck can't I improve at this the way that I want to? Or why, you know, whatever those things might be. And as a younger person who hadn't gone through those steps, hearing that is the worst thing in the world. Hearing that is just like nails on a chalkboard. Coming out the other side of that, I think that there's immense value in that. And I think it's something that everyone needs to hear, regardless of where you are in that trajectory.
Yeah.
Because I think that there's great value in that. I think recognizing that the only way that you can truly make something in the world is to be cognizant of the world around you and to make something in spite of that world. I think that that's the only way to move through life and be a happy, fulfilled person is to recognize
going back to that young friend that wants to be a songwriter that I was telling you about, that I was like, just work at a coffee shop and work on your songs, whatever. He would call and like talk about how everything sucks. And like, and I go, you are in the perfect place right now. Mm. And I was basically just trying to get him to realize like, look, the thing that you want is going to require you to be a different person, a new person. And that new person has to overcome some shit to be that powerful.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it translated, but
no, but it's
like,
again,
basically that's going like, how many times have you had something in your life that at the moment you're like, this is the worst possible thing that could happen, but actually turned out to open every new opportunity and send you on the path that you really are fulfilled on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and you also have to, I think that there's a certain level of letting go that's necessary. Like for me, I'll use, this is going to, again, seem like a silly example, but I'll use college as a very good example. I had no interest whatsoever in going to school. I have what I want to do with life. Mm. The idea of spending 4 years and an ungodly amount of money to pursue this and to essentially get a piece of paper at the end of it just seems absurd to me. And I was very, very lucky. I managed to, one, just get into a great school, but also to have a be put in a financial situation where like, okay, you're not going to be burdened with an ungodly amount of money at the other side of this. Right. And I decided, okay, I am going to go this route. And as much as on the other side of that, I can look back and think, okay, I don't know. Like if my kid was in the same situation, I don't know if I'd be the one pushing him to that. I'd be like, go to trade school, do whatever. Like if you don't know what you want to do, that being said, there's not a second where I regret any of that because it's, I mean, we wouldn't be sitting on this table otherwise. Like that, you know. True. What I mean? Like there's, you can't sitting down and meditating on that is sort of silly in my head. It's like, you're all it's going to do is just drive you crazy when you should just recognize that there's a certain level of on which life just sort of unfolds. And I think you have to roll with it and you have to just accept that. Yeah. Obviously you make your decisions and obviously there is I think everyone is responsible for the decisions that they make, but on the sort of macro, you just have to roll with the punches and understand that life just sort of happens. Like again with Brian, when Brian and I met, I don't know why we ended up becoming best friends, but we did, you know what I mean? And I don't sit here and think about why that occurred because sitting here and thinking about it is sort of irrelevant. Yeah, shit just sort of happens and you just have to accept that and relish that. And I think that when you can do that, it's a beautiful thing because accepting that and having that view of life, you realize that everything transpiring throughout your day has the capacity to do that. And that everything that you're experiencing in life has the ability to be a beautiful thing further down the line. You might be blind to it in the moment, you know?
I think you have to rise to the occasion though.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're in a shitty situation, instead of being just complaining about it, like, okay, you'll know yourself differently if you transform
a
situation.
And no way am I saying that takes onus off of you as an individual to act accordingly in that situation. All I'm saying is that, sitting down and crying over that doesn't do anything. It doesn't affect anything. But yeah, completely agree. Onus is still on you as an individual to make those proper choices.
I mean, cry if you need to get it out. Like, let it out.
Just suck it all up and just, you know.
Let it turn into a tumor. Exactly. Just hold all those. No.
That's what I'm banking on.
Yeah.
Start losing my hair. Yeah. I'll get there by then.
We'll tell you what, let's do this again sometime.
I'm really, really, really glad that we had you on, man.
Me too.
This was a lot.
Appreciate you guys.
This was a lot of fun. Like, dude, this was a really, for this sure. was a ball.
Yeah, and, well, I'm sure eventually we'll start having repeat guests on. You can come back and
play some more songs. When did you say Throw Me a Bone's coming out?
2 weeks, Black Friday.
Okay, cool. So I'll be right around this time this comes out then. So nice. It'll probably be out. So go listen to Throw Me a Bone.
Yeah, please do.
Hell yeah.
Please do.
I'm really glad. This was a lot of fun.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Cool. See ya.